Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to Thursday, Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice, listener-supported independent media. You know, the kind that is becoming more and more valuable as we see the ineptitude of the for-profit 1% media. I'm tickled to be here. It's cool but not cold. It's gray and rainy, not snowing. It's sloppy outside. I just pulled a certain boyfriend's truck. That would be Margie's boyfriend. He's a fine fella. Just put a tow strap on and pulled the... I said tow strap on. You people. And pulled him out of some mud he'd gotten himself into. But it's Thorn in the Side Thursday, and we'll have some conversation radio to go with it, hopefully. Program note, reminder, I'm out of here tomorrow, but back on Monday. I'm back on Monday. And I say that kind of iffy because, and those of you who have been through this procedure will know of which I speak. Ferg is having his wisdom teeth surgically extracted on Monday. So I don't expect to not be behind the microphone, but next week's going to be an interesting week. Monday, Ferg gets his wisdom teeth surgically extracted. And then Wednesday, you know, 2 days later, Doodle goes through the same drill. Right, you get the idea. So, it's going to be a busy week, but I'll be back. I'm just gone tomorrow. And I want to thank you all, especially those of you who answered Brandon from Brooklyn's challenge last night, and who have responded all week long. I can proudly say that counting tomorrow and today, we are only $75 from being able to finish the week out in good form and be right where we need to be to finish February, start the second half of February, but on track to finish February to the good. And that is so exciting. It's inspiring. It's nice to not sweat being able to make the bills. You get the idea. So between now and 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, if we can bring in seven thrifty $2.50 contributions, seven $10 contributions, well, seven and a half, we'll be done for the week. And yes, tomorrow does still count because, well, tomorrow still counts. But it would be wonderful. And so thank you to everybody who responded so well yesterday to get us to where we are. Thank you. And I've sent out notes, and I get some cool responses back. Let me find you one. The responses I get back are always inspiring. Some folks don't write back when I send out thank yous. Some do. In this particular case, Adam wrote back, no last names. He said, I'd written a thank you, and he said, I like the laid-back nature of your show. It feels like sitting on the porch with a cold beer, shooting the breeze about right-wing lunatics. And that was gratifying because that's exactly what it's supposed to feel like. So thank you. Thank you very much. That's here. Oh, yes, this came in from Don. He says, happy to support the show. He said, I came across your show a few years back after Malloy's show concluded, and must say that it's really entertaining and informative. I especially love Moran Mondays and Prayer Meeting Wednesdays. I've never listened to you live because I normally listen to Stephanie Miller's podcast after getting home from work and then catch Malloy's program, but I do listen to your show often on my MP3 player while I lay in bed. Some nights I don't last long before a deep sleep. And, you know, Don, you are not the first person that I've put to sleep, but I'm not quite up there with a really good Methodist minister. Those people can absolutely knock out insomniacs, but no. But other nights, he says, I get riled up and I have a difficult time sleeping. Like last night with that right-wing freak from North Carolina. Man, I was almost out and then regained consciousness to hear most of that guy's rant against his daughter. Craziness! Loved your commentary. Keep up the good work. Well, thank you for being a part of it all. This came in from our buddy Tom and longtime supporter. He said, just got home from work this evening, Wednesday, and started listening to the podcast of Tuesday's show. I'm 18 minutes into it. Oh, God. Just 18 minutes, Tom? Strap in, brother. And horrified by the cop in Walmart. You remember the cop in Walmart. Are you people on welfare? Can't you count? You're holding up everybody in the store. Horrified by the cop in Walmart, suddenly it came to me that perhaps Tuesday should be Tummy Ache Tuesday. Not that every day in this country doesn't cause one, but perhaps it should be commemorated. Head in hands, says Tom. I don't recognize this country anymore. And he has a suggestion, and I will try to follow this evening. Tom says, I visited the helpful, friendly, efficient post office today, and my contribution's in today's mail. And I suggest that perhaps you try to get the fundraising pitch into the middle of the show from time to time, once or twice a week. I know you may feel that it would disrupt the flow of the show, but I know there are a lot of people who aren't able to tune in right on time every day, myself included, but no horn due to lack of funds would be a worse disruption by far. So I will, in fact, try to do exactly that. I can happily announce that we are now only $55 away from being done for the week. Thank you very, very kindly for that. Two slots in the Thrifty 250 taken up. And we'll just keep up with that as we go along. I have made some initial inquiries, by the way, on the toll-free service, and hopefully we'll have that sorted sooner rather than later. The final details will have to wait until I return. I just told you what Monday's like. I remember having my wisdom teeth cut out of my head as though it were yesterday. There are some things you just don't forget. I wasn't knocked out for it. That was back in the day when the dentist put his knee on your chest and got out the really good, you know, got out the channel locks. Can't get a purchase on it here. Give me a little more gas there, Doc. Is it safe? What? Is it safe? I have a feeling dentists hate that movie, Marathon Man. It's probably bad for business. But anyway, that's where we find ourselves at the beginning of the program this evening. And where we want to go and where we have to go. Can we start with some good news? Because I know you like good news. Well, this is at least a little bit of good news. When I think of particular parts of the country, because we have people who live here and live there, I think of people who, and I know that this has got to be at least a, A low-grade happy moment for our dear friend Maura in New Jersey. Because the New Jersey State Assembly has passed a marriage equality bill. Just passed it. They passed it 42 to 33. So let's hear it for a little bit of enlightenment on the part of the New Jersey state legislature. Controlled, of course, by Democrats. It's not like there's some little pocket of enlightened Republicans out there. No, they've been purged. With the possible exception of occasionally Olympia Snow and Susan Collins in Maine, who just couldn't help standing up for the idea of contraception. But mostly vote hardline Republican most of the time. No, the New York Times reporting the New Jersey Assembly on Thursday passed a bill legalizing same-sex marriages, setting the stage for, and this is the downside of the story, an expected veto by Governor Chris Christie. You know, Governor Krispy Kreme. I take that back. That's unfair. Even though I am now living in a world that is devoid of the heavenly delight that is a good Krispy Kreme, the hot now, the neon hot now sign blinks to me in my dreams. You ever been by Krispy Kreme when the hot now sign's going, and you got those things right after they've rolled out of the vat, out of the oil vat, and just through the sugar glaze shower and straight into the box and into your grasping little mitts when they're about a million degrees Fahrenheit. Oh, God. Screw the ambrosia. Give the Greek gods that, and they'll be happy. So it's insulting to Krispy Kreme for me to make sport of Governor Chris Christie that way. No, Governor Chris Christie's just a turd. I mean, can we agree? Because he has promised to overturn the will of the legislature. He's promised very swift action, a really fast veto. Bless his heart, Stephen Goldstein, chairman of the gay rights group Garden State Equality, said, "Today the legislature has brought us to the promised land. We know the governor won't let us enter, but we finally behold the view of our dreams, and we will never turn back." Good for you, Stephen. Good for you. Don't turn around. Don't turn back. Accept nothing but success. Accept nothing but full freedom, full equality, and full rights as an answer. Desperately afraid of what would happen to New Jersey if guys were to pick out China patterns together, or women were to have their names monogrammed on towels and buy little seashell-shaped soaps together. The Republican Party said, "You know what we need to do is vote on this. We need to vote on whether or not people have the freedoms guaranteed by the Constitution." If you just spend a couple of seconds with that and let it rattle around your head for a minute, you'll come very likely close to running in the yard and tearing at your hair and running naked. But it's February, so don't do that. Chris Christie wants to put freedom to a vote. How the hell is that democratic? Well, the short answer is it's not. You can vote for freedom or against freedom. But at least the New Jersey Assembly got it right. The Senate bill passed 24 to 16. And the possibility of an override is tough to get at. So I think the analogy is right. The gay people seeking full constitutional dignity and equality in New Jersey have been Moses-like, allowed to glimpse the promised land, but have not allowed, been allowed to cross over. Moses, however, well, after that, God killed him. I mean, that's what it says in the book. In this case, however, it's a matter of standing at the gates, tapping one's toe, looking periodically at the watch to see what time it is in the universe, and waiting, oh, I don't know, for some little something to break off inside Chris Christie's bloodstream, and so that maybe, well, could that possibly, would that be a message from God? Right. So, but that is some happy news. At least the legislature got it right. You know, isn't that interesting, though? The Republicans can say things like, activist unelected judges have overridden the will of the people. But yet, when an activist governor overrides the will of the legislature, well, he's just trying to make sure that democracy works. Speaking of activist judges, I have to share this one with you because it's just so damned good. You may have seen this by now. The story of a federal judge in Texas. His name is Fred Beery. And probably pronounces it Smith. B-I-E-R-Y. He is a judge on the federal bench. And he held in a case that the Constitution does not permit a public school district to sponsor a student-led prayer at graduation. In other words, he held properly within the framework of the Constitution and the standing law of the United States of America. Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist, hates him. Presumably, Judge Beery is one of those people, one of those activist judges that Newt would call before him in the Oval Office onto the carpet and forced to grovel at Newt's weird, hairy little toes. Well, the lawsuit about the prayer at the school actually came to a settlement, a mediated settlement, which means that no lengthy trial was involved, massive resources of the people of the United States of America were not wasted, and both parties to the lawsuit came to an agreement. They settled the case. Now, when you settle a case in federal court, it has to be signed off on by the court, by the judge. The judge has a right to reject a settlement agreement if the judge thinks it will not meet the appropriate ends of justice. And the way that a court signals that it approves of a settlement is to issue an order approving of the settlement. Obvious, one might think. Well, Judge Fred Beery, in approving the settlement of the mediated settlement of this case, had a few additional remarks to add to his order approving the settlement. And I think it shows him to be a man of class and dignity, unlike a lot of members of the bench, unlike, for instance, Slappy Pube on the Coke Can Thomas, or Sammy It's Okay to Shoot the Fleeing Felon in the Back of the Head 30 Feet Away, who is posing no threat to you whatsoever, or John Blue Eyes of Death Roberts or Fat Tony, my dad was a fascist, no really, not kidding, Scalia. In the memorandum order, Judge Beery says, to the United States Marshal Service and local police who have provided heightened security, thank you. Because, you see, the judge had to have heightened security because the Christians were in a furor. The Christians were in a homicidal rage because they couldn't. They deemed that they couldn't parade and flout and march in the streets and holler their prayers to the sky, you know, contrary to... Well, but anyway. He continues, Judge Beery, to those Christians who have venomously and vomitously cursed the court family and threatened bodily harm and assassination, in his name, I forgive you. It's somewhere in Proverbs that it says that kindness to an enemy is like heaping hot coals on their heads. I figure we got some Texas Christians who's feeling about done to a tender turn. Yeah, a little past medium rare, I'd say. To those Christians who have venomously and vomitously, it's not often you see a federal judge drag out the word vomitously. To those Christians who have venomously and vomitously cursed the court family and threatened bodily harm and assassination, in his name, I forgive you. To those who have prayed for my death, because the Christians were doing that too, your prayers will someday be answered, as inevitability trumps probability. That's kind of a double whammy. And then this. To those in the executive and legislative branches of government who have demagogued this case for their own political goals, you should be ashamed of yourselves. One of those people is, of course, Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist. Judge Beery has been roundly and soundly accosted by the right wing, and particularly by the religion industrial complex. And he added this to his order. Any American can pray silently or verbally 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, in private as Jesus taught, or in large public events as Muhammad instructed. Did you get that part? He just as Muhammad instructed? Judge Beery sank that one in way past the tender flesh. He basically accused the right-wing fundamentalist religion industrial complex of, drumroll please, following Sharia law. This guy needs a medal somehow. Something. Because it takes a lot of... Because he'll get more death threats as a result of that. He really, really will. But it's nice to start out Thorn in the Side Thursday with a couple of acts of heroism, one by a lone judge and another by a group of brave legislators unwilling to be cowed by bigotry in New Jersey. So that's, you know, that's a couple of getting started stories. We've got so much more. I've still got one that bothers me a lot. Just because of, well, I will eventually get to it. Just not yet. Not yet. No, we won't have a Friday on the front porch, so I do want to get a couple of good giggles out there. And this is giggle-worthy. This is the story of Michael Berry. B-E-R-R-Y, Berry. Of Houston, Texas. Michael Berry is a former politician in the state of Texas. God, you just know without me saying anything with the run-up that there's going to be something sad and sick and humiliating. Yeah, and you're absolutely right, and I'm going to make you wait. He's a former city councilman for the city of Houston. He is a fine, upstanding, God-fearing, conservative, family values individual, citizen. Yes, he is, Michael Berry. And he gets on the radio box every day and tells everybody about how we got to have upstanding, fine Christian family values here in this country. I mean, it's Houston. He is a talk show host for KTRH Radio. Picture I've got here shows him sitting behind this is some highfalutin. He's sitting behind an Electra Voice RE20 with the neodymium magnet in it. That's better than anything I got going on here. That's another $300-$400 extra to get the neodymium magnet in your RE20. So they're not just fooling around there at KTRH. No, he's a professional broadcaster bringing truth to Houston, Texas. Unless it's truth that involves him. Because, you see, it was about 11 p.m. Central Standard Time on the 31st of January when an automobile crashed into another car. It was an SUV crashing into another automobile. Subsequently, the driver of the SUV who did the crashing drove away. The crash, like I said, about 11 p.m., January the 31st, occurred outside TC's Show Bar. TC's Show Bar. It is Houston's premier show bar. Show bar? You mean they got them naked ladies what dances around poles with and picks up dollar bills with it? No. Looks like a pretty good deal, where every Sunday Funday is every day from open to 10 p.m. with $1.50 vodka. Uh-oh. TNA Karaoke Mondays at 9 p.m. and Wednesdays at 11 p.m. Where stars are born and legends perform. Oh, dear. TC's Drag Race Tuesdays. Weekly competition where someone gets sent home each week. Winner will obtain over $800 in cash and prizes. Weekly special guests. My goodness gracious. What? Hang on here. Let me look. Just a second. January. We need January. No. I don't want that. I want January. Bless my soul. January the 31st, 2012, was a Tuesday, which meant that it was TC Drag Race Tuesdays. And I don't mean no... Well, I don't know. Maybe it is Top Fuel. Maybe it is Funny Cars. No, not really. No. No, Tadaria Bennett of Galena Park told the Houston police he was working as a bouncer at the front door of TC's show bar during the very popular cross-dressing drag show that was going on inside the club. Right after the SUV crashed into the parked car, he ran up to the car and got a good look at the driver behind the wheel. The driver behind the wheel was, that's right, KTRH, Family Values, Upstanding Conservative, Get America Back to Its Basics, host Michael Berry. Now, Tadaria Bennett didn't want to... mess anything up, so... Tadaria Bennett went ahead and wrote down the license plate number on the SUV. Because the car that the SUV plowed into and then drove away from was Tadaria Bennett's car, which had about $1,500 in damage to it. He gave the license plate to the Houston Police Department. They ran the tag, and, well, bless my soul, it comes back to KTRH, Family Values talk show host, Michael Berry. My friends, we've got to stop this Obamacare. Fascism has come to America, and Obama wants nothing but power, power, power. I wish I had some, I wish I had some audio of Michael Berry. It'd be so fun to hear him talking about, because it turns out it's not like he was just driving by and swerved into Mr. Bennett's car. No, he got into the SUV having exited, you know, the gay bar, the drag bar, with the drag queens, featuring, who? Jueves Caliente? Come see an all-Latina show featuring Alexis Nicole Whitney, Melissa Clinton, and weekly special guests at 11 p.m. Jueves Caliente! TC's Houston's premier show bar, Alexis E. Melissa, showtime, 11 p.m. Drag queens. I'm sure he was only doing research. Bennett gave a statement to the Houston police. He said, in my statement, I said, there's no question, 100%, I could line this guy up if he's standing out here with 50 people. I could walk right up to the guy and say, that's the guy who hit my car. Right? Yeah. Rather than issue the guy a ticket for, you know, leaving the scene of an accident, which is what they give to you or me, whether we had crashed a car outside of a drag bar or outside of the Rippy Mart. No, the Houston Police Department went into overdrive to issue an internal significant event form. Internal. The title of the document is Incident involving a prominent citizen. Summary. Officers were flagged down by a citizen regarding an FSGI accident that occurred several days ago on January 31st at 2300 hours. The complainant saw the suspect strike his parked vehicle and flee the scene. The complainant got the license number of the striking vehicle, the vehicle description, and could identify the driver. The ongoing investigation indicates that the suspect is Michael Berry, a local radio talk show host. And, well, it gets a little better because wanting to be good citizens, the managers of TC's show bar turned over the video shot inside the bar. Inside the bar. That shows clear images of... Yeah, right-wing repiglicking. You get the idea. Michael Berry. In the gay drag bar. Michael Berry must have been in... I was upset. I realized I was in a gay drag bar. There wasn't no women's up there. Because the accident report says the SUV went in reverse for about 70 feet on the street before colliding with the car and leaving the scene. Backed 70 feet. I don't know, was he texting? Here's the fun part, though. So the Houston Police Department investigated. It's all pretty open and shut. They got video evidence of the guy inside the bar. They've got eyewitness identification of the guy in the car. Open and shut, right? Well, the Houston Police Department turned it over to the Harris County District Attorney's Office, Harris County being Houston. The prosecuting attorney has declined to file criminal hit-and-run charges against Michael Berry of KTRH, Houston's hot conservative talker. The TV station reporting this, Local 2 investigates, sent an email to Michael Berry asking him to respond to the hit-and-run allegations and the videotape that showed him swanning around the drag bar during the drag show. Yeah, that's in the video, too. Michael Berry responded, "I don't respond to such things." FSGI, as referenced in the internal memorandum, is failure to stop and give information. It's a misdemeanor. But hit and run, well, you know, the victim, Mr. Bennett, said, you know, if you're going to stand up and say anti-gay things, because this guy is one of those people, they've got the gay agenda and they're trying to get people to be all homo and stuff, and they want our children to think it's okay to... If you're going to stand up and say anti-gay things and be conservative and be Mr. Good Guy, and then when something happens that points you out and puts you in a place with the exact business that you aim to shut down, it kind of makes it seem a little like I need this to go away and I need it to go away quickly. Which apparently the Harris County District Attorney is doing all he can to facilitate. Ray. This fool could have had $5 and a Jimmy Swaggart sex guide and had big fun. $5? Clayton. Bob, this is a Family Values show bar? Yeah, that's it's a Family Values drag bar. That's right. All you need is love. Ray reconsidered his previous assertion and said, "Oh, a gay bar. Make that a Richard Simmons video and a tube of bacon lube." Bacon lube. Ron and Raleigh. Dios mío. Hey, Bob, ay caramba, las chicas es muy caliente, ¿sí? Oh, sí, sí, Ron. Jim in rare form again. Hit and run with some hot stuff? If only Donna Summer could sing about this faux pas. Such dragulations, right? Neologism. Dragulations. the David in Tennessee has moved into fact-check research team mode. Bob, did you notice on the top of the webpage for the Wingnut Talkers station, it has a quote from old Ronnie Reagan. 80% of these hydrocarbons come from plants. No reason to get excited. Insight from St. Ronald of Reagan, circa 1980. KTRH. Nothing in there about upstanding Mr. Barry being suspended pending investigation. No. We're just going to sweep it all under the rug. You reckon a liberal talker would get treated that way? Yeah, me either. News Radio 740. News Radio 740 time, 6:42. Oh, load, I can't wait. New PETA ad makes light of abuse. The KTRH Town Hall. Congratulations, Milo Hamilton. Listen to Milo's farewell season on News Radio 740 KTRH. Milo Hamilton? My goodness gracious. He used to do Braves games, and my father would sit by the radio, and every now and then my father would become immensely frustrated with the broadcast, and I would just hear him, "Go to hell, Milo!" To which my mother would respond, "Kenneth!" My father would say, "Go to blazes, Milo!" I didn't know Milo was still working. Holy cow. Obama loses key backer. Obama girl unsure if Obama is her man. Texas running out of execution drug? State may have to find alternative execution methods. Win private suite tickets to see Reber McEntire. KTRH is providing all the drinks and food. Watch Alan West sings Pretty Woman. It's on the connected page. Oh, let's see. Michael Berry, Adam Bold, the Car Pro, Sean Hannity, yes, of course. Mark Levin, Flush Flimball. Wait, where's Mr. Barry? Oh, there. Oh, he's at the top of the list. Michael Barry. Today's stories and links from Michael Barry. What? Obama, rising gas prices means the economy is improving. Oh, for heaven's sakes. There he is. Oddly, nothing in here about meet me at the drag bar. Darn the luck. And by the way, says David in Tennessee, Jueves. So the closeted wingnut was there for Hot Tuesday. Oh, jueves, Thursday. Jueves means Thursday. Okay. So the closet. Well, apparently, Tuesday's pretty caliente too. Ray's still working. All right, have it your way, Bob. Ronnie Raygun, Mike Tyson, and a tube of bacon lube. That's entertainment. Whew. You know, we're off and running. Ron and Raleigh responding to song cue from Brother Jim. Yeah, all right. Yeah, I'm up for this. Why not? Sure. You bet. God knows it's appropriate. Going out for a hot Houston talker, Michael Berry, Conservative Values, at the Drag Bar. Go get 'em, Michael! We don't have a webcam. Got some ferocious chair dancing going on here. Not that kind. How can you not get... How can... Even pudgy, old, pasty, doughy, liberal, progressive radio host got to get moving to a song like that. Hot stuff, Donna Summer. Thank you. Thank you, Ron and Raleigh, and thank you for the suggestion, Jim. Fritz writing in from Arkansas. Even in Arkansas, there are drag shows, Bob. They are quite popular, and I've personally seen a few in my time. Many performers go for the over-the-top look in their shows, but a few performers look quite fishy. That means very female and passable in drag speak. This, of course, begs a question. As for the Conservatalk talk show host in Texas, that's Michael Berry. Don't forget the name. Did he ever watch RuPaul's Drag Race, or did he rail against the cable channel logo, which carries RuPaul's Drag Race as being against family values, in one of his rants to his sheepish listeners? Well, you get the sense that he did, because that's what Mr. Bennett says is part of the problem. This is the pull quote. If you're going to stand up and say anti-gay things and be conservative and be Mr. Good Guy, and then when something happens that points you out and puts you in a place with the exact business that you aim to shut down, it kind of makes it seem like I need this to go away, and I need it to go away quickly. The only thing that will make a difference here is if there is enough popular pressure to get this guy charged, or more appropriately, it sounds to me like get the whoever the circus judge is in Harris County, Texas, to appoint a special prosecutor, because why wouldn't you charge this guy with failure to stop and give information, or hit and run, or destruction of property, or stream littering? Whatever. Why not? Because it's Texas, and because he's a conservative. Jesus, Dave. Y'all think maybe he wore out his VHS copy of Wigstock and was truly thrilled when it came out on DVD? Oh, God, is this... is this going to be one of those shows? I hope so. I haven't had a good giggle in a couple of days. Okay. Educating Bob. Lunes, martes, miércoles, jueves, viernes, sábado, domingo. David in Tennessee. Damn, I haven't done that in 40 years. I figured Marty and Martes. Okay, martes. Yeah. Martes caliente as well, right? At least according to Michael Berry, swanning around inside the drag bar. Jim, I don't know if I've got that. Chains of Love by Erasure. I don't know. I don't know if I've got that. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Ray. It's not the visual you need. I'm not the one writing emails to the talk show host that include the two words bacon lube either. Okay? Yeah. Sauce goose, sauce gander, all good, right? Clayton, this gentleman was just doing research. What harm was he doing? It's not the harm, it's the hypocrisy, isn't it? Wait a minute, maybe, have I got another song that's... Because... You know, I'm feeling a little DJ-ish tonight. Hold on here. Yeah, there they are. There they are. Oh, yes, of course I do. Oh, how do I pick? Yeah, this is. Yeah, we got another dedication. We'll go ahead and take our top of the hour break and open the phone lines. Other stories on tap for tonight. You know the number, 304-658-3333. We'll fix the toll free as soon as we can, but that's the number for now. 304-658-3333. We'll open the phone lines, and we'll take our little break because it is Thursday, and we do have Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen and the Green News Report on the way. Okay. I love Tuesdays and Thursdays because I love what Brad and Desi do with this. It's just, it's excellent. It's brilliant work. So we'll do that. Now let's see. There. No. 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 Okay, all the buttons are right. Yeah, how to... This. No, this. This. Yeah, this is for you, Michael Berry. This is for you. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn.
Right. choose. How can I explain when words get broken?
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, February 16, 2012.
Exposed, the right-wing Heartland Institute's plot to undermine U.S. science education. Reveal, climate change deniers use super-rich sugar daddies to buy the media. Monsanto convicted of poisoning. The Pitchfork Rebellion in Oregon. Plus, mysterious exploding pig foam.
It's real, kind of a gelatin-like material.
No, it's not Santorum, but it's close.
Ooh, all of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I am such a huge supporter of hydrofracking, the drilling process that blasts pressurized water, sand, and chemicals below the Earth's surface to break up rock and release natural gas. It's like giving the Earth an Alka-Seltzer if the Alka-Seltzer shattered your internal organs so oil companies could harvest your juices.
I know the feeling. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, some pretty explosive news this week with these documents that have turned up from the right-wing Heartland Institute showing that hundreds of thousands of dollars have been put into misinforming the public about global warming.
Yes, the whole thing is pretty breathtaking. We'll get to that in a moment, though. First, some quick headlines. In Oregon, a group of residents in the Western Triangle Lake region, calling themselves the Pitchfork Rebellion, are fighting to stop timber companies from spraying herbicides next to their homes and schools after tests showed residents' bodies had high levels of the weed killer atrazine and other chemicals found in those pesticides. Federal and state officials are now investigating. In a landmark ruling in France, agriculture biotech giant Monsanto was convicted last week of poisoning a French farmer. Although a chemical used in Monsanto's pesticide was found in high concentrations in the farmer's blood, Monsanto's lawyers dispute that its pesticide is the cause of his illnesses. Here in an interview with Euronews.
There was no evidence of a causal link between the symptoms presented by Mr. Francois and the inhalation of a weed killer, he said.
Monsanto may appeal the ruling. In Minnesota, researchers at the University of Minnesota are trying to find a solution to exploding pig farms.
To what?
Exploding pig farms. farms. Yes, you heard that right. Over the last 3 years, pig farmers in the Midwest have reported seeing a mysterious new foam up to 4 feet thick building up on the surface of massive pig manure lagoons. The mystery foam apparently traps flammable methane gas, and when a spark ignites, it causes a huge explosion, destroying industrial-sized barns and the thousands of pigs that are stored there at a time. Some researchers speculate that the foam may be a new form of bacteria that has evolved in those manure lagoons.
Good Lord, I don't even know where to go with that, so I won't. You're welcome.
It's been an extraordinary week for the climate change denial industry. First up, if you want to influence the public, get a super-rich sugar daddy to buy you a TV network.
Devoting some time and effort to encouraging those we know who are super-rich to invest in perhaps even establishing a new satellite TV channel is not an expensive thing.
That's the bold strategy recommended by Britain's discredited climate change denier, Lord Christopher Monckton, who recently advised a so-called libertarian think tank in Australia on how to use the media to benefit the coal mining industry. Monckton goes on to praise Fox News in the U.S. as a model for pushing back on Australia's new carbon tax on its biggest polluters. In the U.S., a treasure trove of documents exposing the inner workings of the climate change denial think tank, the Heartland Institute, were released this week by online media outlets thinkprogress.org and desmogblog.com, two websites that track the climate change denial industry. Someone posing as a Heartland Institute board member obtained confidential internal documents under false pretenses and passed those documents on to the websites. The documents include budgets, strategy plans, fundraising targets, including a strategy to increase funding from wealthy donors like the billionaire Charles Koch, an oil and chemical industry magnate, to expand the organization's efforts to deny climate science. The documents say, quote, other contributions will be pursued for this work, especially from corporations whose interests are threatened by climate policies. Just two of the revelations in the leak, the Heartland Institute is developing alternative lesson plans for U.S. schools to teach kids that climate science is a hoax. Another document details the thousands of dollars in payments that the Heartland Institute gives to prominent climate change deniers every month. In a statement, the Heartland Institute did not confirm or deny the authenticity of the documents, save one. They said that one was an outright fake, although the information in that document is repeated in the other documents, and some of the individuals named have confirmed they are receiving funding.
So the Heartland Institute, they were going to put hundreds of thousands of dollars into teaching kids fake science, actually changing the curriculum to say that climate science was a hoax, and I'm just flabbergasted by this report. Check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com for more on this story. It's remarkable. While you're there, by the way, please consider a donation to help sponsor the Green News Report. We don't have sugar daddy right-wingers paying our bill. We rely on you. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Money.
Bubble Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Bubble Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, stuff for my dog.
Holy crap. There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Bubble Genius. We got your soap right here.
And got your bath and body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
What, Brad Friedman? You don't know where to go with the mystery foam on top of pig poo lagoons? You ain't trying, Brad. Because I remember a story just earlier that I think it was Monday, because we were talking about language issues, and I noted that the recent announcement from some, it wasn't the Goethe Institute, they're way too classy for this, But it was some institute in Germany that announced the most valuable English addition to the German language in the past year had been Shitstorm. Scheitzenblitzen. I don't know. But it sort of seems applicable now, doesn't it, in its most literal sense? Then again, you gotta ask. Given the nature, the locale, the contents, the method of create, has anybody seen Rush Limbaugh anywhere near one of these lagoons? Just asking. If Rick Santorum is the frothy one, does that mean that we now have a reason to refer to Rush Limbaugh, Flush Flimbaugh, as the foamy one? Ray, who just can't leave it alone, okay, I'll switch from bacon lube to pig foam. Lots of ways to go there. Oh, yes, there are, Ray, and I just proved a couple of them. Note in from Kate on the Front Range. Oh, yeah, Scissor Sisters. She's my man. Ah, indeed she is. Haven't worked out to that for a long time, says Kate. Paren, do another fundraiser announcement, Bob. That's Kate's job, you know, making Bob do the fundraiser announcements. And we are into the middle of the program, pursuant to our buddy Tom's suggestion. So, yes, I am pleased to announce that we are only $55 away from being done fundraising for the week. $55, five and a half Thrifty 250 contributions. So, thank you. We can do this, I do believe. Wait, we are now $30. $30 away. That's so cool. Thank you very much. A couple of things here and there. Got a note from Jim saying, can we please keep it light tonight? I'm trying, Jim. But it's going to be difficult. You know, if you were listening to the Green News Report just now, which I'm figuring you didn't get up and go fix yourself a sandwich or a cocktail or whatever, and maybe if you did, you were still within hearing range, you may have heard mention of the super rich who, want to continue poisoning the planet, apparently, and think, I don't know, do they have plans for a rocket ship to Mars? Or some sort of bio-bubble dome a la Logan's Run? Capricorn 2312, carousel awaits. Because where are they planning on living? If you peel the collar down on a Koch brother or the Adelson in Vegas, are they developing gill slits? Is that it? Is this like something out of Men in Black? Oh no, that eyeball thing. No, he was out of breath. He was breathing hard. They breathe through their eyeballs like the lava lizards of the Galapagos Islands. Beats the hell out of me. Whatever happened to the good old days when the super rich spent their time building super big houses and buying yachts and stuff? I mean, there's value in yacht buying. There's all kinds of boat builders up and down the coasts of both coasts of this country. You know, folks that are putting food on their families. And what, the super rich are just hanging them out to dry now? Because they want to deny global warming? Yeah, Jesus. I've got one of those stories. I've told you about cedar before, haven't I? Gosh, doesn't that just sound pleasant? Cedar? Not S-E-D-E-R like Sam, and he's pleasant enough. He's a nice guy. But cedar, C-E-D-A-R, you know, that keeps your woolens from being eaten up by moths. It's cedar, And they whisper in the breeze. Not this cedar. Cedar stands for the Coal Education Development and Resource. Coal Education Development and Resource, Inc. They've got a press release out. Mars Invasion 2030. No, you heard that right. Mars Invasion 2030. This is the bunch that goes into like fourth grade classrooms and tries to tell little Johnny that he doesn't want to grow up and be a scientist or anything, or an engineer, or one of them damned liberal professors. He wants to grow up and be a coal miner. He wants to grow up and blow up mountains for a living, because that's what's really patriotic. Jeeves. I don't know if I can find this, or yeah, here we go. Our buddy Matt Osborne created this video on YouTube some time back. Just a refresher, okay? All right. I got to thinking about something with regard to this whole business of CO2 can't possibly be a pollutant because it's good for you. It's in your soda pop. Remember? I mean, really, Republicans have made that argument on the floor of the House of Representatives. Well, I have a solution. Being as how I'm a firm believer in science, I say let's prove how good CO2 is for a human being. And I say we do it by reinvigorating the manned space exploration program. Mars does have an atmosphere. It most assuredly has an atmosphere. The only problem on Mars is that Mars has an atmosphere comprised of, wait for it, yes, CO2. It's just chock-a-block with CO2. There's lots of CO2 on Mars. Theoretically, if you could do something to keep water on Mars, and you could, just take some springtime bedding plants, you know, some petunias and peonies and marigolds and stuff, and if you could get water to them, there's enough CO2 there that, yeah, you could plant, you know, you could just plant Mars, and the next thing you know, you got an oxygen atmosphere, right? But who needs oxygen when you have Republicans? I say that Barack Obama should reinvigorate the manned Republican exploration of space. We need to send Republicans to Mars. It's the red planet. They're the red party, red state. I'm liking this more and more. And we won't even have to spend money on spacesuit gear for them, because they're Republicans and they know that CO2 is good for you, so they can just hop right out of the spaceship and say, Lafayette, we are here, and just get busy breathing that CO2 that's so damn good for them. I think we should build and send an entire fleet of transport ships filled with Republicans to go and populate Mars. Because they apparently have some sort of inbuilt, maybe inbred, special ability to breathe and extract the oxygen from CO2. Man, that's a great slogan. Mars needs Republicans. Wow, we're on to something here. Just start queuing them up to the spaceships. Yeah. There's no liberals there. You can set up a free market economy. You can have pure 100% guaranteed capitalism just as soon as you figure out how to breathe CO2, because it's good for you, CO2 is. Just ask Joe Barton and Michelle Bachmann. Just
And they're going to be there too. They're going to be your leaders. This is a beautiful thing. And I think it's something that all Americans can get behind. I think the Republicans would get behind it. They'd get to live on a planet where none of us filthy liberals were. I think this has tremendous potential. Mars needs Republicans.
Not to say that I'm any kind of prophet with the tattered purple robe with the poorly appliqued moons and stars on them or anything, but that was almost 2 years ago, and here it is coming true. CEDAR, the Cole Education Development and Resource, and the Challenger Learning Center of Hazard, Kentucky, established a partnership in April 2007 for the purpose of creating the Mars Invasion 2030 from Cole Camp to Space Camp program for fourth grade students from the coalfield regions of East Kentucky, Southern West Virginia, and Southwest Virginia. The purpose of the program is for the students to discover for themselves. Really? Without any help? From CEDAR? The many similarities between space science and coal mining, as well as between astronauts and coal miners. I'm trying to keep it light, Jim. But I'm getting close to kicking furniture. The similarities between astronauts and coal miners. Well, let's see. They both sometimes die in horrible explosions that are caused by human error and outright gross negligence. There's a similarity between coal miners and astronauts. The program casts the students as the first humans that will colonize Mars, which is expected to be sometime around the year 2030, when NASA might attempt to place humans on the red planet. The students will learn about the various skills involved in the establishment and operation of coal camps? Shitsy! Coal camps? On Mars? And then apply those skills in the planning, creation, and operation of the first camp or colony on Mars. And remember, when they get to 13,000 colonists, Newt Gingrich gets to be king of Mars.
I claim this planet in the name of Mars. Yes.
The program's still kind of stymied between that comparison between astronauts and coal miners. Do coal miners wear diapers into the hole? I don't know. The program's curriculum addresses parts of all seven core content domain areas of the Kentucky Department of Education Standards of Learning Requirements. The program is DVD menu driven. That means they put the damn disc in and walk out of the room and let the little Hellcats watch it and go and smoke a cigarette and have a cup of coffee and thank God that the drug companies are still pumping out Xanax as fast as they can take it. And will provide studies and activities for anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks of classroom work. Because, you know, you wouldn't want to be, you know, it's fourth grade. You wouldn't want to be want them to be spending time working on reading skills or writing or actually studying science. You can't have kids studying science that you expect to put on a D9 cat and send toddling around a toxic waste site for the rest of their lives. You don't want them knowing any of that darn science. Because then they'll start asking questions about things like the periodic table of the elements and things like mercury and arsenic and selenium and cadmium and barium and manganese and aluminum and magnesium and why is all of that in... Why are we breathing all this crap? Because you'd probably have to learn to breathe it on Mars, too, son. This will be followed by a visit to the Mars Museum at the CLC, Challenger Learning Center, in Hazard, where they will participate in 18 different hands-on activities based on science, math, and technology. Well, that's true, you know, the bulldozer operation is based on science, math, and technology. At the end of these activities, the students will view a video showing a retired astronaut and a coal miner conversing about the similarities of their background as related to their personal, educational, and professional lives. Never mind the fact that the two will not be able to understand each other. They will focus on the similarities of their educational requirements and job activities as related to science, math, and technology, and discuss how all three are prominent throughout their respective fields. Now, you know, I kind of draw the line at just lying to children. Am I supposed to believe that you can quit high school and become an astronaut? Because you can quit high school and become a mountaintop remover. Lots of them have. Similarities of educational requirements. The desired outcome is for the students to see not only the similarities between space science and coal mining. You know, we've actually got a genuine, no kidding, rocket science scientist in the audience, and I got a feeling he's just going to get Excedrin headache number, Avogadro's number, just as quick as he hears this story on the podcast. The desired outcome is for the students to see not only the similarities between space science and coal mining. It's very dark and cold in space, and it's dark and cold in the mine. You can die in both places. Both places are very hard to reach when you have a problem, and there's not much chance of rescue. To see that, like space science, coal mining is a very sophisticated, honorable, and important profession that requires people to sublimate their essential basic morals, ethics, and human dignity in exchange for a payday and being willing to poison every living thing around them. The students will see that the mining industry offers careers that require advanced education in science, math, and technology. Roof bolter? And that it also offers the opportunity for them to stay in their home region and enjoy a career that can provide them with a very high standard of living. Once you look past the black lung and the cancer. The program was piloted in May 2008. It's expected to continue through May 2013. This is happening. Really, really. How is that not child abuse? I'm at that point where I'll settle for just a little bit. How is that in any tiny, teensy, itsy, bitsy way not child abuse? What, son? You want to be an astronaut? Well, why don't you be a coal miner instead? Because coal miners are just like astronauts. Bill in Cleveland, some of these red state types think that when they reach Mars, they'll meet the descendants of John Carter. Well, newsflash, John Carter ain't there neither, and neither is Mother Maybell. Ray, it's very cold in space. You just perfectly described a Republican's head, cold and empty. to keep it light. Trying. Failing! But trying. Flipping through. Yeah, okay, there's that. Oh, we did that. No. Sooner or later, I'm going to get around to this story because I'm going to hate myself when it. Well, not hate myself, but it's going to make it hard to keep it light. Let me check something here real quick. Well, that explains it. That explains it real good. Let's see. Just got a PM from John Fox. See your email, Bob. Xanax in an MP3. Okay, John. This would be a good time because apparently the reason phone calls aren't coming in, I was beginning to feel a little lonesome that you were going to make me actually do a 3-hour filibobster this evening. I don't know, as some sort of penance for missing Friday on the front porch, but no, the darn phones don't work. So check this out while I reboot the phones. Ooh, that's pretty. Thank you, John. Is nice, John, and the phone system is happily rebooting even as we speak. All right, let's see what's happening. Okay, that is those are some buddies of John Fox's down in Australia. That's Husky. The name of the tune is The Woods. And oh yeah, the phones are working now. never a dull moment. Yeah, I hope they hit it big too, John. I really, really do. All right, well, theoretically, it looks as though someone is actually on the phones. Let us go there, too. Hey, welcome to the program.
You hear me?
I hear you.
I can't really tell if it's working or not. It's Skype.
Pardon?
I guess you can't hear me.
No, I just heard that.
What about now?
Yeah, I hear you. Who have I got?
That is Sandra.
Oh, Sandra, okay. You sound a little different that way.
Well, I did. I thought I tested. I can't really tell if, it's working or not anyway.
No, it's you're coming through nice now.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, I thought I tried it.
It was going good for a minute there. You kind of faded away for a sec.
What about now?
Yeah, there you are.
Oh, no. Well, this is a bit suspect.
Well, we'll get there. I've got to do a little on-the-fly engineering on this end, too.
Well, no, because you can dial landlines, apparently, but I don't, I've never done this, so I wasn't too sure what would happen.
It's happening nicely, as far as I can tell.
Oh, okay. Anyway, the only reason why I'm calling is I can't get past this Virginia thing.
Oh, the transvaginal ultrasound?
Well, yeah, because, a woman, one of the woman representatives tried to put an amendment to, force them to require the permission of the woman, right?
Yes. That failed.
And this guy, yeah, it failed, but the reasoning that he gave, he's trying to say that, well, the abortion is invasive, but you know what? That is the procedure she's agreed to.
Yes. And this is, this is the medical equivalent of Randall Terry screaming in her face on the way into the clinic.
I mean, because I was looking it up, and, the sort of OBGYNs, they don't recommend this, as a normal course. So this is sort of, I mean, I know it's a bit strong, but it's kind of state rape. I mean, I don't know what else to call it.
No, it is. It's kind of like that asshat the other night shooting his daughter's computer. It is totemic rape. And they're happy about it. And of course, I don't know if you saw this or not, Sandra, but it manifested, more of this stuff manifested itself today when they had a hearing on the contraception requirement in the House of Representatives. Did you catch this?
No, I heard about it, and that was disturbing too, because women aren't allowed to testify?
Exactly. Daryl Issa called this, what is he? He's the richest man in the House of Representatives. He's also an unindicted co-conspirator in a felony racket. And
right.
Called this hearing about the contraception requirement and refused to allow any women to testify.
Right. Well, I mean, to me, I just think, once again, the conservatives or whatever they are really caught up in their own PR, because I don't know who's advising them, but that has to be the dumbest ass move I've seen by these regressives in a while. And bring on the dumbass. I mean, this is the upside of Citizen United. Bring on the dumbass billionaire with his bare aspirin. I was like, keep it coming.
Yeah. Okay? That's the other side of the same coin.
Well, I'm just saying, it's like, Citizen United, as we see, is hellacious, but if we get to get a look-see into the world of these fucked-up people, and enough money in the world, okay? Not enough money in the world. Keep it up.
Well, I hope, Sandra, that it does work that way. But it, again, that same thing that afflicts me, that every time I hear some of this insanity, I ask myself, how many millions of Americans are nodding their bobbly little heads going, yeah, that's right, just put an aspirin between your knees and that's good birth control.
Right, but did this guy, he had four kids, did he stop fucking after the fourth one? I'm just curious.
Oh, I'd love to ask.
You know, it's like, what are you talking about? You know, I mean, it's just the absurdity of it and the weirdness of it. It's just like, I don't know, I mean, maybe I'm not seeing it, you know, maybe I'm being too hopeful, but to me, it's so far out, because you don't have to be well into politics to know that, well, shit, I want to control my family planning, you know?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm saying, but they're, you know, because they're going after the basics at this point. We've had, you know, 50 years plus of access to birth control. So I'm like, well, what is going on here? I'm trying to understand what they actually think they're doing. Because if Santorum thinks he's going to be the nominee running on this shit, good luck.
And I think you identify something there, Sandra, because, for instance, when he's been running around Michigan, he has been trying to stay away from this puritanical the 11th century mindset and talk about jobs instead, at least according to the reporting that I've read. But this has got to follow him. He can't get away from this. And you know, there's another aspect to that put an aspirin between your knees business that's particularly infuriating. Who wrote that? Was it a seminal text on feminism called The Female Eunuch, or was it something like that? Was that Betty Friedan, or do you know what I'm talking about?
Well, she wrote the Feminist Mystique. Is that what you're talking about?
No. There was something that some early feminist wrote something about a female eunuch, but that's what this boils down to. Is these people want to, because the whole upshot. I know that old joke about birth control by putting an aspirin between your knees. That means that you don't have sex.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. It was just, you know, it's like, and of course, you know, I'm kind of understanding what you're saying about people nodding their head because, you know, it's like, I don't know, do people automatically get that he's talking about abstinence? I don't know if they do.
But I think it goes further than simple abstinence. It goes, I mean, that man just literally declared that no woman in this country should be allowed to enjoy sex unless there is the creation of a baby involved.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, that's always the base of it. And the implications are far-reaching, obviously. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we're back to that discussion of The Handmaid's Tale, aren't we?
Yeah, and we're back to, you know, before birth control was available, which was when that asshole was 21 years old, by the way.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's just like, you know, it's just stunning, and it just looks like a fascist state, because these are the sort of issues that they dwell on when you're deep in fascism, you know?
And that's what I come back, I mean, it is just gobsmacking, because it's kind of like the note that I had from Tom earlier this evening. He said, I put my head in my hands. He said, I no longer recognize my own country. It's Chris calling from Nanaimo, Canada, last night saying, you know, Bob, you all live in crazy town. Because there are enough, and how do I put this? On the one hand, there are enough voters in New Jersey that if you put marriage, equality, freedom, constitutional rights on the ballot, the voters will reject constitutional rights for a significant portion of the population of the state of New Jersey. On the other hand, if you were to put contraception on a ballot, Do you maintain any hope that contraception would remain legal in the United States with the vast, vast wealth of the church being put to Citizens United use?
Well, you're suggesting that they would be able to reverse it just by the language in 2012.
Well, I'm suggesting that given an opportunity to vote on it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, but I'm sort of gobsmacked. You think that would, if it was put to a sort of national referendum, say, you think that it would be voted down?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay. Cause I have a hard time imagining that it would, but. You know.
Well, if you assume that people act in their own enlightened self-interest, sure, it would be impossible. But what happens to an electorate that is bombarded day in and day out by advertisements about the poor little babies that don't get made, or equating abortion and contraception? Because remember that's been one of their frames, that's been one of their tactics going back several years now, because I remember all the pharmacist conscience cases with pharmacists who would not fill contraception prescriptions, and their conscience claim was that contraception causes silent abortions. That's the phrase.
Yeah, and they got endless attention and coddling, didn't they?
Yeah. And they're still getting coddled because that was the birth of this conscience business.
Yeah. No, I mean, and all of it, the end result is to, at first, deny access to poor people, and then I guess it just goes on up the ladder because, I mean, they're doing a damn good job of restricting, you know, abortion, at least if you don't live in the blue state.
Right. And
it seems to be.
And they're hard enough to find if you do. I mean, in the Stan states, in Mississippi Stan, there's one place. In Kansas Stan, there's one place.
Yeah, see, I don't really know, but I would assume that a lot of women have access to over-the-counter morning after stuff, or what?
Well, it would be interesting to drive through places like Tupelo and Corinth, Mississippi, and see how hard it is to find Plan B on the over the counter.
Yeah. Well,
I'm guessing it's a challenge.
Well, it's too much, and I'm just thinking, good Jesus, you know, it's a. Telling the niece, well, I guess she'll just be staying in California. I'm joking. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Good night. But,
well, and, you know, you asked that Freese bastard that funds Santorum, you said he's got four kids. Did he stop having sex? No. After kid number four, it was all Kobe Bryant. Isn't that just...
You know what? How do you know? I don't even want to wrap my head around it. Stop. Because, first of all, I'm already thinking about ice cream and shit when I hear that dude's name. Straight up, okay?
I know.
So I'm trying to get past that. I'm like, Foster Freeze? Where's the ice cream? Anyway, did you see that story about the poor granddad that was harassed to death?
Oh, my God.
I'm like... I just couldn't believe that story. That was horrific.
That was Texas or Mississippi? I can't remember.
It was Texas. The dude was cuffed 1, 2, 3 times, I think, when he was trying to get the hell home.
Yeah, and they placated the 5-year-old granddaughter by what? Letting her play with the handcuffs or something? I forget.
And they had her in the back seat of the cruiser, you know, all kinds of weird stuff. And the poor girl was obviously upset. And anyway, that one sort of did my head in. I don't even know what to say.
White grandfather taking his little dark-skinned granddaughter out for a walk and gets rousted by the cops and accused of being a kiddie rapist. On what grounds?
I mean, no, it's one of the things where somebody's peering out the window and they see, and they, like, call the police on the dude. What do you say? I see some man walking with a black child and kidnap. I mean, I don't know. What do you do? Because someone called the police on the poor man and his granddaughter. That's how it all began.
Well, and it's hard because I remember, you know, I tell the story at Thanksgiving time of the night that Agnes got rousted by the cops because our children were being really bad in the Kroger store after my two youngest, who were much younger at the time, screamed at her as she was taking them out to the car because they were misbehaving, "Let go of us, you mean woman. You're not our real mommy." It was horrifying. But the Kroger employees contacted the cop in the parking lot, and sure enough, there he showed up at the window, my poor lovely wife bawling in frustration, sticking her hands out the window, said, take me now, three hots and a cot, just tell their dad he's in the store, just come get him, I'm ready to go. But you know, I mean, that all turned out to be a horrifyingly funny family story. There's not a lot to laugh at with this story. The grandfather just outwalked, and there's a, and what, cops or whoever the dime dropper was just makes an assumption that if an older white man is walking with a little black girl, that there's something bad going on. Yeah, what is this?
Yeah.
Grandparental miscegenation? I don't even know what to call it.
No, and then next thing you know, the way things are going, that poor baby is deported to, you know, Finland or something.
Yeah. Because we've got that story too.
You know, and it's just like, it's horrifying because, you know, all the borders are porous now for everyone. And so you don't know where the hell you might end up.
It's creepy.
It is just bad. And listen, I'm gonna have to hang up. I mean, I don't know if this will work out, but I mean, I'll try again. But the funniest story of the day, though, was the labor flag.
Oh,
state flag.
I could have, you know, because I looked at, I remember elementary school and we learned the state flags and, you know, this one's West Virginia and that's Alabama and that's New York and there's California and it's got a bear on it and that was that was the state flag of Wisconsin, right?
Right, but the political was so quick. White House flag, labor flag in Milwaukee. I mean, it's a joke. They had the American flag, and then they had a flag that said 1848, and it's the state flag. And it's just like Wisconsin, and they were so quick to. I mean, it's just laughable until it's not, and they had to pull it. But you know, of course, someone had to cachet that shit. That's why.
That was a great moment. That really does need to be filed very near the top of something that great moments in for-profit 1% media history.
Well, that's what I mean. And it's, you know, because when political started, I thought, oh, yeah, that's one of them third way, fake, whatever, moderate centrist things. And, you know, once again, centrism is an ideology. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it is. But I mean, I looked at it. I thought it was from The Onion, because it's getting
exactly.
Because the Dateline Milwaukee. It's very clear what side President Obama is on here in Wisconsin, and this is from like you said, this is from Politico, right? I mean, they're a big player in media politics. It's very clear what side President Obama is on here in Wisconsin. Behind the stage where he will speak today are two flags, an American one as usual, and right alongside it, a flag for the local union, Wisconsin 1848.
Some of the comments were great because they were saying, oh, the U.S., I mean, the USA, 1776.
Yeah, that's the USA. That's the United Steelworkers of America, right?
Right. No, I mean, just some funny ass comments, and they had to pull. I don't know how long that page is up there, but listen, I was rolling. I thought, wow, you know, this just it's just straight up exposing what they are, you know, the sort of profit, for-profit media. They are not interested in being the press as they should be. I don't know what that was. But that just, I don't know, I thought that was a great exposure of political and the types of huge, you know, I don't want to say Huffington Post, but probably them too, you know, if you get right down to it.
Well, I can't wait for him to, I don't know, I can't wait for maybe Obama to go down to Alabamistan and have Politico report that he was speaking at a Scottish-American convention, because, you know, the Alabama flag looks surprisingly like the flag of Scotland, you know, white field, red stripes, done. What are we going to get when he goes to California and there's, and that flag with that bear on it's there? Is that going to be the Sierra Club flag, and he's giving a nod to environmentalists?
Right, or maybe someone will think it's, you know, I don't know what they'll think it is. If it's a bear, maybe it's gay, you know, the bears. I mean, no.
in a shameless pander to his gay supporters, Barack Obama appeared today under a flag with a bear on it.
You know, or something, who knows? But the other thing, I was wondering if you had heard about this, because I only caught a glimpse, so I don't know if I should comment, but there's some sort of ruckus with MSNBC, and I guess they have, I forget the woman's name, she's a sort of fairly well-known black writer, kind of another Obama supporter, Perry.
Oh, Melissa Harris Perry?
Yeah, and then there's some sort of fallout with, God, what is his name? The professor, West, Cornell West. I don't know what happened. I mean, I don't know if someone got a show and there's some sort of ruckus going on. But you know, I'm like, Cornell West is at risk of becoming one of them movement Arcas of Negroes. He might want to pull it back a bit.
I'm sorry, that word's that's the second time. It still gets me. I'm sorry. Yeah, I guess Melissa Harris Perry is to get a weekend show at MSNBC.
Right. And, yeah, okay. And then
and what, Cornell West doesn't like it, or?
Or something, yeah. And I'm just thinking, oh, no, you better get back on the road with your other movement entrepreneur, you know, Tavis Smiley.
Right, yeah.
But anyway, I need to look more into that, because that didn't really sound right, because, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm a big fan of Cornell West, but, you know, he keeps running up against it because I guess he's been a bit too vocal about Obama, and, you know, they, I guess they come after you. I don't know.
Well, they will. There's no getting around that. And, well, I guess MSNBC's in it too, because I think it was Jude last night who mentioned the fact that that Tony Perkins creep has been on MSNBC so many times that that Chris Matthews now refers to him as my old pal Tony Perkins.
Well, see, I still can't get over Rachel Maddow when she was in Iraq talking about the food so eating. That's like my eyes. I haven't recovered from that, so I don't really know what's going on.
Oh, by the way, you just got a note in from Andy.
Yes?
He said, tell Sandra ex-Governor Willard Romney gave more to the Mormon Church than to the U.S. in taxes. $3 million.
And we
saw that coming, didn't we?
And the fact that money was used ruthlessly and viciously against, you know, the support of Prop 8. So,
right.
You know, his money is working hard. No, he's a horror show, and if he loses in Michigan, I'm going to be rolling. I'm going to think, oh, my God, you are just, you see what I'm saying? I mean, is there a chance that he may lose Michigan or what?
Yeah, I think there's a distinct chance. Of course, there'll be a bunch of attack ads, just like they did to Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist down in Florida. But no, he is at risk. And the thing is, after Michigan, you know, the battle cry will be on to Super Tuesday.
Well, no, but wouldn't Romney just have to roll out? Did they call Mussolini El Duce? You know, just roll out some of them. You know, because it's really the same. You Santorum, Mussolini. You know, it really is. It's just, he is the closest thing I've seen of just sort of a straight up fascist, like a real one.
The not kidding kind.
Incredible. Yeah, and from Italy, you know, too, straight up. But anyway, I'm just sort of surprised that Romney could lose Michigan, since that was kind of his home base there, wasn't it?
Yeah, but the problem is, I mean, he is so tone deaf from that line, I was a severely conservative governor.
Didn't I send you that video?
Yeah.
The one that I said, making Obama's job easier?
Exactly.
That video is crazy. Yeah.
And of course, he's got to deal with a very ugly reality for him. You've seen the General Motors numbers that just came out recently, right?
Well, you know, I think that's partly why the Michigan numbers are probably down, because of his very vocal stance against helping the auto industry at all, right?
Yeah, David in Tennessee noted that he did a piece or an interview or whatever that was titled "Let GM Fail."
Right. Now he's trying to backtrack, and he just sounds ridiculous, because everybody knows what time it is with Romney. You know, it's purge this, purge that. He has the same story with the housing. Let them all be foreclosed so me and my buddies can buy a million at a time and just charge rent and just turn it into a serfdom. Just finish him off. One big serfdom. So I just can't imagine that he's going to be the nominee, but it's going to be interesting to see.
That's why I said it's going to be so fun to hear the battle cry go up of on to Super Tuesday, because it's Super Tuesday is what, March the 6th?
Yes, March the 6th, and we have Michigan on the, is it on the 20th? Is it on the 27th? Or
yeah, 28th? I mean, yeah. And so what happens there is if Michigan is not winner take all. You know, a lot of these Republican states went to proportional awarding of delegates not too long back. And even if Willard wins, if he gets 32% of the delegates to Frothy getting 29, to Ron Paul getting 23, to Newton Leroy Gingrich getting 19 or something like that, he's in a bad, bad place, because it is not going to get better for him in Alabama or Mississippi or any of the other Super Tuesday states.
Well, yeah.
I mean, he could be bleeding from a sucking chest wound after March the 6th.
And even if he does come out in some way, he's going to be a shell of himself come the fall, wouldn't you think?
There's not going to be any there. He can't. He's got to get to somewhere that people will, I don't know, respond to his brand of whatever it is, snake oil that he's selling. I honest to God, I don't know, Sandra, if he can get there in one piece.
Well, let me tell you something. If gas goes to $5, I can run and win against Obama. I'm just saying, that's a real worry to me. And if the oil companies are running that game where they're going to try to screw Obama in that regard, between the oil companies and those apartheid bitches in Israel, you know, Obama's in a bit of a fix. He got to walk a tightrope. Now, I only care because I just would like us not to slip into total fascism right away. But, you know, the oil prices are creeping up. It was like $120 today. You know, if Iran...
And the damnedest thing out of that is that prices are going up while demand is going down.
No, that's because you got people speculating on and on and on, and it's going to drive it up. But you also have these geopolitical concerns out there. You know, all good cover for them to sort of stick it to us. And, you know, people don't care about geopolitical my ass if they're paying $5 a gallon. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Even
there
if
there is no
even if the jobs numbers and the economy numbers are sort of uptrending as it is, it's that $3, you know, because I just noticed we're paying for no apparent reason. You know, that this is when it gets confusing. $3.50 a gallon here in the hills and hollers, when it was three.
Yeah, well, Brent.
Go ahead.
Oh, and I'm saying that, yes, like, what was 120 yesterday? I didn't check it today, but, you know, it's a bit of a worry.
Well, I mean, this is a nation that treats oil as its, you know, its crack supply or its heroin supply. It's a huge worry.
Yeah, I mean, well, no, because, you know, there's never any ground. I mean, since the 70s oil shock, the U.S. has been acutely aware of how difficult of a situation they're in with the energy, yet and still we keep coming up to this, and if we have another oil shock, people are going to be scrambling again. It's like some sort of Groundhog Day, but it's very damaging to Obama's political fortunes. But anyway, there's only one other thing I wanted to mention because I was laughing is, you know, now we know why Ron Paul is so anti-privacy with that whole Von Meissen business, right? Did we talk about this?
No, we didn't. No, we didn't. This is just beautiful.
But that stuff was, I couldn't even believe it.
Well, when you wrote back and you told me that Von Mises lived with his mother until he was 52 and then got married at 50 or 57 or what it was, whatever it was, and then he got married at 57 and died at 69 or something.
Right. So, I mean, you know how creepy that is right there?
And really creepy. But it's
and not only that, but oh, no, go ahead.
No. I was just going to say that it seems to fit right in line with the idea of, you know, a plucky little Pittsburgher who views wartime profiteering as a material good.
Well, and just sort of, you know, the whole use of women is purely for men, and any change in that dynamic, you know, causes spasms in the market. I'm just like, my God, you know, this stuff, it was just so way out there and just disgusting because, you know, this libertarian shit is a bunch of crap. That's basically what it is. It's incredible.
Well, it's never been lost on me that there's a reason that the Von Mises Institute is in Auburn, Alabama. There's a reason it's in Alabama, because it's right at home there. Because, you know, women are supposed to stay down on the plantation in their damn hoop skirts and not get all uppity and trying to be messing in men's business.
No, but when a man wants to stop having kids because it's economically stupid, then he can have her on all kinds of birth control, whatever the hell he thinks she should have. And it's just, you know, once again, the state of the world is always women's fault. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, it is. And look, I mean, that goes back to the book that they thump so much. And, well, they read that part where Eve bites the apple and then they quit. Oh, it's the women's fault. Okay, well, everything, yeah. Let's go beat them with a rod no thicker than our thumb and everything will be better. It really does. It drives and motivates them.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, according to them, you know, a man gave birth to a damn woman, so it just starts right there and ends right there.
Maybe that kind of explains the former Houston City Councilman, conservative talk radio host who found himself at a drag bar on Tuesday night, January the 31st. Maybe we just sorted it all out, Sandra.
Could be. Gestation right around the corner. Anyway, listen, I'll let you go.
Can you imagine the maternity fashions? Take care, Sandra.
Oh, God. All right, bye.
Bye now. Well, that's cool. Sandra making the Skype thing happen. Yeah, just to follow up a little bit on what Sandra mentioned, how does Willard Romney get well this way? February 28th is Arizona and Michigan. Both of them are primaries. If he doesn't just run away with both, it's a big problem, because March 3rd is Washington. I don't know. Maybe he has some hopes among the weirdo repig. How many weirdo repig lickens are there in Washington? But anyway, no, there's more than I even dare think about. Super Tuesday, I kept saying Alabama. That's not till later. Super Tuesday is follows: Alaska, Georgia, Idaho, Massachusetts, North Dakota, Ohio, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Vermont, Virginia. Now, the only people on the ballot in Virginia are Willard Romney and Ron Paul. Okay, so let's give him Virginia. And let's say that he'll get Massachusetts. I think Alaska's certainly got its fair share of weirdos. Georgia, yeah, and I mean, that's Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich amateur paleontologist territory. Idaho? I don't know. Maybe there's enough Mormons in Idaho to carry it for him. That's what he's rooting for in Arizona, too. But, you know, Arizona and Idaho got a bunch of teabaggers in it. North Dakota, I wouldn't write that one down. I wouldn't write that one down with Willard's name next to it. Ohio, But you got plenty. I mean, when it comes to the right wing, there's cranks everywhere. Oklahoma, I wouldn't give that to Willard in a minute. Tennessee, same thing. Vermont, maybe. And we mentioned Virginia. So after that, it becomes Kansas, Wyoming, U.S. Virgin Islands, Guam. I don't see Wyoming or Kansas going for Willard. Maybe I'm wrong. Then, March 13th, Alabama, Hawaii, Mississippi. Still no good news for Willard. Missouri, he already lost Missouri in the pageant portion of the swimsuit portion of the pageant. Then Puerto Rico, Illinois, maybe. Louisiana, wouldn't count on it. Maryland, Wisconsin, Texas, no. April 24th, Connecticut, Delaware, New York, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, maybe he gets some help there. But, I mean, this is a tough row to hoe for Willard Romney. And he could be staggering by then. By the way, as to gas prices, Isaac says, gas in Columbus, Ohio this morning, $3.59. This evening, $3.09. What the hell? I wouldn't complain about the $3.09, Isaac. In the Great Northwest, Cindy says, $3.50 a gallon. Out here, it's $3.89. And been that for months, unless you buy diesel. It's been over $4 for diesel per gallon for over a year. And Sandra's right. Everything else could be coming up roses. There would be problems if gas hits. You know, and never put it past the oil companies, especially when Barack Obama said in his State of the Union speech, he said, it's time to end the subsidies. It's time to take big oil off welfare. You think that the big oil boys wouldn't manipulate prices to try to get rid of that one? Sure they would. What are we going to do to them? Quit buying gas? Not to be all paranoid or anything. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Okay. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, you said, mentioned that sucking chest wound. There's a bunch of conservatives down in Alabama that are wondering, what the heck kind of sex is that? Ain't never heard of a sucking chest wound kind of
sex. Yeah, but they'd be willing to try if nobody was looking.
Right. Key words, nobody looked at. So I know you got my email, and I don't even know where to begin. My gosh, you know, when you see discrimination in the raw, pure, just absolute, complete discrimination, I don't know what to say. I have sat all day just in total shock. I was going up to... came back from Denver, let's see, today's Tuesday night, And I got a call this morning, and the driver had complained that I had asked for help getting to the front door up there in Denver. And Denver VA is great for helping you once you get inside. They've got transport services that'll come down, and volunteer services that'll help you. And then when I got back to Colorado Springs, it was about 5, and the building was still open. And I asked this driver, since I had to wait for my ride home, I asked him if he could help me find a restroom. And I get this call this morning that they want me to have an escort the next time when I ride with the DAV, to have an escort going to and from Denver, because that was too much help. And I'm just like, what? A volunteer driver has a problem with helping me find a restroom? He has a problem with helping me find the front door? I'm blind, and you've got a problem with going helping me go 20 feet? And I just couldn't believe it. Since then, I have gotten some calls, and I'm waiting to see what the outcome of that is, but honestly, I don't believe it. I forget who it was earlier that said, what happened to the country? I'm wondering if we didn't hit a time warp somewhere and some of us accidentally spilled through it or something.
Well, you know, it's interesting you would mention that. I can't tell you the number of times that my lovely wife has looked at me and said, Bob, something happened last year on that boat, because we went through the Bermuda Triangle, and when we came back, everything was weird. She said, I think we got to go get back on the boat with everybody and do it all in reverse, and we'll come back and everything will be okay. And I keep looking at her and go, honey, it just feels that way. It was weird when we left. It's just getting weirder, because this, you know, I've heard some people refer to political election years as silly season, Kevin.
Yep.
No, it's not. It's sadistic season. I mean, this is, it was a year ago or more that I said, or maybe it was November 2010 when we saw the outcome of the bloodletting that was that election. And I mean, I remember distinctly saying, you know, strap in. If you think it's bad now, it's only going to get worse. And by the time we get to November 2012, we're all going to be screaming.
Yep. And, oh, I think it's gone on, really. You look back to just after 9/11. There was that brief moment in time after 9/11 where everybody was together.
Yeah, about 15 seconds.
Exactly. And all of a sudden, somehow, if you're Republican, right-wing, Christian, conservative, you're patriotic, and the rest of us aren't. We're actually against the United States. And I don't know how much more I can stand it. I really don't. You're talking about someone being blind and you can't help me find my way to the restroom that's just down the hall. It's just a curvy hall and real hard to navigate. Oh, and I have a walking boot on my foot, which is the biggest reason I need help, because my balance is all off. And you're going to call me up and tell me I need someone to ride as an escort with me to and from because you can't be bothered?
Jeebus. Well, you know, I just got an email in from our dear friend Jude, and she said, please give us horn listeners the name of who we need to call to chastise for discarding you if you feel comfortable enough to give it out. She said, action is required now.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, that's what they accidentally ran into, because I'm not going to sit down and say nothing. I've already looked into that. I'm waiting for a phone call tomorrow, and if that phone call comes back with the same answer, then, yeah, I will be more than happy to do that. I should anyway, though. Now, I don't know the name of the person, but the driver was a Fulbright colonel. I know that much. He had retired. And that might explain part of it, and I hate to say that against officers, because my officer in the Navy was an officer I respected highly, our division commander. I loved him. But, you know, it's this right-wing conservative and I just can't.
So what? I mean, are you? Is this one of those moments where you're supposed to pull yourself up by your own bootstraps or something, Kevin? I'm kind of. I mean, I'm as flummoxed and flabbergasted as Jude is.
Well, you know, I can find my way around. It's not the point. I've got a white cane. It's the point of doing it and taking a little bit of time off of what it would take me to find what I'm looking for. And we're talking about something that basically helps me go through a door and find the door to the restroom. That's it. Small.
I mean, what was this, a gentle nudge that you're supposed to get a dog or something?
Well, I could, but I shouldn't be required to.
No.
You know, that's the whole point. I mean, it goes back to the things, just common people.
Yeah, you're not asking this guy to take you to the mall.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, it
I mean, was there a busload of other people? I mean, people late for appointments or?
Nope. There were three veterans on there. It was a slow day that day. There were three veterans on the bus, and actually one of those veterans, two of them, both of them actually helped me. So this colonel doesn't really have too much to complain about, because one veteran helped me get inside the door from the bus, and then the other veteran, after my appointment, we had to wait till everybody was finished with their appointments to come back here. Me and the other veteran started up a conversation, and we're sitting there talking, and I had Tim, it was before our wait, so I had him help me get up a couple times. I mean, it really, what this colonel had to do was very minimal. And, of course, those two other veterans had no problems helping me. But this guy has a problem and goes to the scheduler and says, oh, that one guy over there, he's got to take have an escort with him every time he rides. And
Wait. Is that just you paraphrasing, or did he really say that blind guy over there?
Well, he didn't say the blind. Yeah, I'm paraphrasing. The blind guy over there part's kind of implied, but it could apply to anybody, Bob. What if I were paralyzed from the neck down? Are you not going to help me get to the door? Because, like I said, the VA is great about getting me to and from in the hospital with no problem. But the 20 feet it takes to get to the door, are you going to go back to the scheduler and say, no, that guy needs an escort? You know, they don't understand what it means to lose independence. And I fight to stay as independent as I can, but there's times I get a little bit sick of struggling to find a restroom by myself or finding a door by myself. And so I ask someone, hey, where is this door? And he's going to go and say I need an escort because I asked him to do that?
You know, I'll be interested to hear what our pal Kate on the Front Range says, because she spent a considerable amount of time being a volunteer driver for the VA and it was up in Montana, so it was drive 250 miles and pick this guy up, and drive 250 miles and take him to his appointment, and drive 250 miles and take him back home. So I'm guessing she's got some insights on this, and like I said, I will be curious to see what she has to offer.
You know, I said to the scheduler, I said, why is this guy volunteering to drive? Doesn't he understand the three words on the side of that van, disabled American veteran, particularly the first word? And so if you're going to be a volunteer driver, wouldn't you take that into accountability if you were a driver?
Well, Sailor, he's trying to teach you some self-reliance. He's afraid that you're at home just wallowing in your own self-pity, and you've got to buck up, Sailor.
I guess so, but you know, I'm kind of it's getting.
I just feel icky even having just said that, and I hope you know that I was just being a smartass.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, no problem. It goes. Here in where I'm at, we have a paratransit service through the city. And I was back in a wheelchair the first time I tore this tendon. And I had problems getting drivers to help me carry the wheelchair down one flight of steps. And it's not a heavy wheelchair. It's got the peep things off of it. It's your basic wheelchair. It's not heavy. But there were drivers who said, no, we can't do that. The rules don't allow us to do
that. Well, where is this escort you're supposed to have supposed to come from, Kevin? I'm kind of...
Well, I assume family member. I don't know. I guess I'm supposed to pay someone, maybe? I don't know. And that's the other part of the assumption. You know, if you're disabled, shouldn't you have someone always helping you? And that's not what it's about. You know, I do have a caregiver that comes in and helps me cook and clean since this foot has never really healed. But I still, you know, when she does go with me, she does a great job guiding me. But I'm still independent in the sense that I'm still going out and doing things and trying to live like a human being. And I guess they just want me to stay at home all day and do nothing. And it just, I don't know if I can take it much more, because it's the idea that I live in one of the most conservative cities in the U.S. and the heart of Christian conservatism. I'm seriously thinking of starting a new religion. I really am. Because I have the tenets of the beliefs of the Christian faith, but I, in no way, shape, or form, can I condone what I've seen out of Christianity.
Well, and that's, you know, that's the nature of the question that I've asked quite often, Kevin, and that is that, the good, and I'm not trying to piss anybody off, okay, but the good Christians believe that Jesus was born of a virgin, that he was the living Son of Almighty God, and that he was apprehended by the Romans, nailed to a cross, killed, that he was taken down, put into a tomb, and that 3 days later he rose from the dead. I mean, those are just the basics. And Jerry Falwell believed that, and the Pope believes that, and every Christian, with some few exceptions, believes that. And the reward of believing that is that when you die, you go to heaven, and you are rewarded for your belief and your faith with eternal bliss. Okay? So, I don't know how you come about, I don't know how you come up with that redefinition. You know, they all, to one degree or another, everybody believes that all you got to do is say, Jesus, forgive me, and you're forgiven. You know, some people have to say a couple of Our Fathers or Hail Marys or whatever, or maybe you have to abstain from the blackberry cobbler Wednesday night at in the fellowship hall. But it's all the same, and so, you know. I'm sure some would say that it betrays a bit of metaphysical juvenilia on my part, but the fact of the matter is, I don't want to live in an afterlife that includes Jerry Falwell, Adolf Hitler, Lester Maddox, Richard Nixon. I don't want to. No, no. If that's what goes to heaven, do you understand my meaning?
Because that's what you mentioned, the basics of the faith, but in between the birth and death was where Jesus said things like the Sermon on the Mount, and they conveniently forget.
Well, they do forget it, Kevin, but it is not essential to salvation, and that's why they do. That's why when the Roman Catholic Church talks about contraception, they don't say, it says in 3 Philippians 12:22 that, no, they say church teaching is. Because the church's opinion carries more weight than the actual scripture.
But if they say they believe in the scriptures, you look at the scriptures, and they don't, the Jews never even consider a Jewish child to be human until, I think it's 8 days after they were born. They couldn't be named until 8 days after they were born.
Well, I think Texas Betsy said something about 30 days before they could be mourned at death.
Right. Now, that's something you have to think about, and it's where I fully agree with you and Malloy. How could you expect a parent not to grieve for a child if they're not 30 days old? How could you expect, you know, the old story back in the Old Testament of Moses' brothers' kids being consumed by a fire from God, and God told Moses not to grieve for them? Or God told...
But you're talking... It's not just that far back. I mean, as recently as the 16th, 17th, 18th centuries, infant death, infant mortality was so common that parents honestly did not invest a whole bunch of future hope in their children until they saw that they were going to have a reasonable chance of growing up. And that's how the not mourning part comes around.
Right, but that is a natural human reflex, avoidance reflex, to try and avoid feeling that extreme grief. That's kind of irrelevant of religion. Somebody might have tied it into religion at that point in time, but you know, you can understand if kids are dying at a rate of 20-30% of the population, kids under a year old, that the parents are going to try not to invest too much emotional
alarm. And remember, there's also church teaching that says that until they're about 12 years old, the soul turns around, goes right back to God, no questions asked. It's like a 30 day warranty on something you buy at Wally World. They'll take anything back within 30 days.
And I, you know, this is what bugs me, and I think I said this to you in an email the other day. Questioning never was disallowed, or never should be disallowed, because it's when we stop questioning that, or it's when we start questioning that we've made the greatest discoveries in human history. Galileo and Newton were almost put to death over their.
Right, but you want to sort of empirically put that to the test, Kevin. You go to any church on any given Sunday of your choosing, wait till about halfway into the sermon, and raise your hand and say, "Excuse me, I have a question."
Yep.
You're not allowed to ask questions of the faith. The faith is allowed to give you answers.
And that's why Christ preached against the ruling leaders of his time, because they were not using religion as a tool of love. They were using religion as a tool of bondage.
Right, but you also have to understand, Kevin, that a significant debate took place within the 100 years or so following the murder of Yeshua, the Palestinian day laborer.
Yep.
And that debate was between the people who had followed him.
Yep.
And one group said what really mattered about Yeshua was the groundbreaking stuff that he taught in life.
Yep.
And he was telling us how to live ours. And the other side said, nope, didn't matter. What mattered, just like Paul said, was that he got murdered and got gruesomely murdered, and we have to worship the gruesome murder.
Yep.
And when all the dust cleared, the people who had won that argument by the 4th century or so, with the approval of the Emperor Constantine, were the people who wanted a death cult. And from that day to this, Christianity is a death cult. And I'm not being mean, I'm merely talking in plain sociological, somewhat anthropological language. It is a death cult. It is a cult that worships death. And it's there to be seen in the long laundry list of holy, blissful Christian martyrs who got to be that, not because they lived upright lives, but because they got torn to pieces by a lion or had their heads lopped off or thrown in the river with a wolf or you know, any of that crazy crap.
Yep.
So, I mean, there are essential problems that go back to Christianity's very basic origins. And if you want to learn a lot about this, you might look into a book called The Gospel of Judas.
Yep.
Because that's a real lost gospel. It was only and the whole Bart Ehrman wrote a book about it. Ehrman, a real scholar. He's down at the University of North Carolina. And the story of the discovery of the book and the saving of the book is like a piece of Raymond Chandler detective fiction. But then the content of the book makes clear the nature of this discussion. Some people wanted to worship. It was our buddy Tosh writing the other night who said, "Bob, I think you really do a pretty good job of explaining the secret message of Christ," and that's Gnostic language,
right?
And there were those people who believed that there was a mystery to it and that it involved, you know, stuff within the self. You know, kind of the way that Islam tries to explain to the West that jihad is typically not a word that one uses to describe some guy with a dynamite belt setting it off in the middle of the bazaar, but that jihad is a perpetual, eternal struggle to live the right life that takes place inside oneself. And the Gnostics kind of believed in something similar to that, if I understand correctly. It was very mysterious, and it was about... learning the holy Sophia, the wisdom part of the so-called Trinity, to the point that you even see a little bit of a bleed over when they build the Church of Hagia Sophia in Constantinople. You know, that's the Church of the Holy Wisdom, Hagia Sophia, Holy Wisdom, and it's the manifestation of the feminine divine that was just gut stomped by the Roman Church as it achieved dominance. So, wow, I didn't mean to filibuster at you that way, Kevin. I apologize.
You know, where it gets down to the road for me, rubber meets the road for me, is I am free to believe what I choose to believe or not choose to believe. I am not free, however, to force you to believe what I believe. And Christ never told me to force you to believe what I believe. And whenever you become, suffer an illness or become disabled, you do go to a questioning period of your life. And I've come to a whole new place of what I believe. Before I became blind, I was an EMT, and I've seen things that you just can't explain. But that's my evidence. That's not scientific evidence. And I can't prove it to you, no matter how hard I tried. I could not prove it.
No, I understand. And where I'm coming from, listen, it can't compare with what you have gone through and so many in this audience have gone through, this Horn family, because there are a lot of sufferings that manifest themselves within our little Horn family, whether it be sight issues or mobility issues or pulmonary issues. I have at one time or another learned about just about everything there is, and the one thing I hear back is that it's in the sharing that there is some sense of gathered strength. But just in my own existence, Kevin, I've since, oh jeepers, it is 10 days now, I think, that every morning and every night I stab myself in the finger to see if my blood glucose has risen to something approaching poisonous levels inside my own body.
Yep.
My dad was a type 2 diabetic. It has landed on me. I'm hoping that I can pull back from the brink by losing some weight. But I know that it's always, even if I do, it's always there waiting for me, okay? And, you know, my response to it is to, you know, sort of poke myself in the pancreas and say, thanks for the intelligent design.
Yep.
That's a Jim Dandy there. You know, how do I explain the visceral abdominal birth defect with which I found out that I was gifted at my origin and only found out, you know, 47 years later, 46 years later. There's some more. I mean, what? Did my mother sin to cause God to not like my large intestine?
Yep. Well, I...
Because it's an intelligent design, right?
Right.
And, you know, this thought occurs to me as far as, you know, heaven is concerned. I don't know if you know this, but there in your neck of the woods, Kevin... of course, is James Dobson.
Yep, right down the road from me.
James Dobson is probably one of the most offensive human beings ever to moving about on the planet today, at the very least. Just from the standpoint of how he has written about his glee at beating a puppy, and how he has written about one must beat a child until that child cries real repentant tears. Okay? Well, that man became close to, I believe it was Ted Bundy. Immediately before Ted Bundy was executed. Now, this man had done horrible, horrible things to other human beings. He was a monster. If you want to use the words, he was a demon. Okay? But at his subsequent to his execution, do you know what James Dobson said?
Yes, I did. Go ahead.
He accepted the Lord Jesus Christ as his personal Savior and was saved.
Yep.
So add Ted Bundy to that list of people that I don't care to share paradise with.
Yep.
And I've got a story that I didn't get into. Maybe we'll save it for next Wednesday. It'll still be fresh. There is a movement in this country today, Kevin,
yep,
that is aimed at what they call the 4 to 14-year-old window. It is a movement that aims to get hold of children between the ages of 4 and 14, and seeks to turn them into little evangelists inside their public schools. And they discuss, Kevin, how they do this to children. Listen to this. Ask them, what is God's punishment for sin? Tell them that the punishment for sin is being separated from God forever. Ask a child, can you think of anything you can do to get rid of your sin? Guide them toward salvation by asking questions like, who is the Lord Jesus? Why did God send his Son into the world? 4 to 14, Kevin. Can you imagine the perversion of spirit that must be required to look at a 4-year-old, a 4-year-old, and tell them that they are sinners?
Yep.
And of course, James Dobson, in his autobiography or whatever it is, hagiography, has explained how he walked down the aisle at his daddy's church at 3 years old to confess his sins and be saved.
And as you and I know, a three-year-old barely understands that he's alive, much less what sin is. And I've always been skeptical of someone who told me, oh, I got saved at 3 and 4 years old, because I'm thinking, you didn't even know what the term meant at 3 and 4 years old. You might have said it, but you had no, and that's why I go back to the questioning. Because, you know, you go through stages in life, childhood, teenagehood. Of course, in teenagehood, it's natural to rebel. You're becoming an adult. You are wanting to break away from the chains that hold you there. And so, how can you get saved at 3 years old and then, you know, 15 years later, it's a whole different life you're living? I don't understand how they think that it could even be possible to do that. How someone could make a consensual, that's the word, consensual choice.
Informed.
To be saved. Informed, exactly. Informed consent. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, even as far back as when I was just a little bitty Baptist, they wouldn't baptize you. They would not allow you to walk the blood-red aisle until you were 12 years old, because that had a special meaning. It was considered the age of accountability. 12 years old was the minute. The minute you turned 12 was the day that God would start toting up your nasties and send you to hell because He loves you so much.
And then and that's the whole thing. What kind of God would send a 12-year-old to hell? You know, that's the problem. That's why I question. That's why I've come to my own beliefs on it. And I'm separating further and further away from, I've separated from the church basically, but I say it in this context, I'm separating further and further away. The more religious they act, the farther away I want to run.
Right, and you know, if they paid attention to their own book, you know, where even loopy, crazy, hallucinating most of the time St. Paul was saying, you know, if something is a stumbling block to you, if something is a stumbling block to your brother or sister, don't do it. Even if it's okay to do, don't do it.
Right.
And so that's what the right-wing religion industrial complex does, is it throws out nothing but stumbling blocks the whole time, saying, but it's okay for us. That's why, for instance, right-wingers can say, we forgive Newt and Leroy Gingrich for his two divorces and God knows how many philandering, chiseling affairs he's had, because he tells us he's repented and God's forgiven him. But if you look at him and say, well, you reckon God's forgiven Bill Clinton?
Yep.
No, he's going to hell.
Yep.
You know, I just got a note in from Texas Betsy, our blogger. She says, I'm so glad my religion doesn't focus on sin and focuses even less on sinners.
Yep. Well, that's what's become the standard nowadays. Republicans are not for anything. They're mostly against everything, if you think about it. It's always you can't do, you're not allowed to do. And I really think, you were talking about the Romney, I think we might even see a good old-fashioned floor fight come August down in Tampa. Because I think not the bigwigs, but the rank-and-file people that have been voting against their own best self-interest for the last 30 years, are finally waking up a bit.
No. I mean, I'm not trying to just gainsay you, Kevin, but no. I mean, there may be a floor fight, there may be a brokered convention, but it won't be because Repiglicans are coming to their senses. If they were coming to their senses, they'd walk away from the whole filthy charade. No, it will be because they absolutely rebel at the idea of having to support one of them damn Mormons.
Yep.
It will be driven, in other words, by bigotry and not by some sense of political expediency or desire to win, even. They would I mean, there's a significant portion of people who would rather have frothy Rick Santorum or Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist, than Willard Romney, understanding that both of them would be beaten like tin drums.
Yeah, but there's a part of the... I mean, you look at the polls, and what, Congress's approval rating's down to 10%? So you have to figure a lot of Republican people are throwing their hands up in total despair over what's happening. And you can talk about them being bigoted against Romney, that's true, but look how Romney is bigoted toward other things. And so, you know, it's kind of like, I'm not voting for that guy because he's a Mormon. But none of us on the left are going to vote for the guy because we know he's a bigot himself. And like you said, President Obama could get down on his knees, pray to God right in front of everybody, please forgive me, and they'd still say he was the Antichrist. You know, that's how ridiculous religion has gotten. And that's why I can't stand it so much. Because it's just gotten stupid. That's the best word for it. It's gotten stupid. It's not the silly season. It's the stupid season, but it's been going on now for about the last 12 years.
Well, I go back again. I say it's the sadistic season. It's the sick season. Yeah. It's the psychotic season.
Either all the words apply.
Yeah.
But the trouble is what are we going to do about it? And that's why with this thing like happened to me today, hell no, I'm not going to be silent about it. I'm not just going to let them pat me on the head and say this is the way it's got to be. No. I'm tired of sitting back and watching this stuff happen.
By the way, you got a note in from Texas Betsy. She said her son, his nickname is Texteen. She said when Texteen was 8, we relied on a local transportation service for the disabled, or at least we attempted to. I was in the wheelchair and wasn't driving much, if at all. Free rides for the disabled, but $2 a ride for family members. Health aides rode free. Oh, and no children allowed. After a few phone calls to the office and then the board above the office manager, I ended up registering my kid as my home health aide, but every single driver gave me a hard time. And he was my health aide. He pushed the chair, he carried things, he did everything in public that any health aide would. I wish this conversation, Betsy says, surprised me. It doesn't. Ugh. Now you might be interested to hear this. Kate did write in. Subject line: Kevin's dilemma. And as I said, she did this thing. She said the driver, regardless of rank at retirement, was actually totally right. Kevin describes being totally blind in a walking cast boot. Drivers are to drive only. The passenger is to be totally responsible and able to get in and out of the van without assistance. Finding a bathroom is not part of the driving responsibilities. It's permissible for fellow passengers to give aid, but not the driver. Regarding wheelchairs, drivers are not permitted to load and unload chairs nor walkers. If the passenger needs assistance with appliances, they need an escort. These rules and regulations are to protect the vet, the driver, and the VA. I know it would have been easy to point to the bathroom or even to walk him to the door, but the regs are there for everyone's protection. We weren't even allowed, and this, you know, she's speaking from her experience having done this, we weren't even allowed to offer a hand or arm up into the van. The driver's reporting to the dispatcher was well within his responsibility. That is for the passenger's protection in the future. If an injury were to happen, the DAV is open to a crippling lawsuit because the drivers aren't professional. Then she closes by saying this: the rules suck sometimes. I bent and broke them too often enough to get fired or written up had I been caught. But my passengers loved me and asked for me by name. Go figure, huh?
Well, that's sad but true, but I just, you know, that's where I go back to where are we going as a country, because when you're telling me our drivers are volunteer down here, and because they're not professional and a volunteer, I guess in theory they could be sued anyway, but if you think I'm going to sue a company that's giving me a free ride up to Denver if I happen to slip on the ice...
You won't, but someone would. You won't, but someone would. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Andy also, with another note following up, he said, also remember Ted Bundy, we were talking about Ted there a few minutes ago, was a Republican apparatchik in Seattle. He was a party insider, hard at work electing Republicans. If you're a psychopath or a sociopath, you fit right in with this party. And he's right. Do you remember the story of, was her name Susan Smith, Kevin? She,
the girl from Carolina that killed her kids?
Yeah. Remember that her daddy, who had sexually abused her all her life, or her stepdad or whatever he was, remember that he was a party insider for the South Carolina GOP?
Yep. Yep.
But we're not supposed to talk about these things. We're not supposed to talk about the BTK killer in Kansas, who was a registered Republican and always voted Republican, was a scout leader and some sort of lay deacon or whatever in his church. I'm not supposed to talk about that either. And if you raise politics in relation to any of these sick bastards, well, that's not relevant. That's unfair. That's like... And so because we are not allowed to talk about what it is that grooms and raises up and provides the nurturing space for these monsters, we will therefore continue to germinate monsters.
Yep. Yep. And any book I've ever read on any of these serial killers has never included, other than a brief mention, like with Doug Rader, I did know he was a deacon in his church and that. And I knew Bundy was a Republican, but it was kind of secondarily to the whole story. You know, they didn't mention that as a underlying factor in their psychopathy. And you're right, it should be mentioned. It should all be studied with these guys because, you know, and...
I mean, I remember a story that broke, gosh, it was probably 8 years ago, about a contemporary Christian DJ in Nashville, Tennessee. Hey, good afternoon, Nashville. Hope you're having a blessed day. Here's a little something from Amy Grant to put a smile on your face and a song in your heart. God bless you, Nashville. Dude was found with enough kiddie porn on his computer What's an animal I'm looking for? To make a buzzard vomit.
Yep.
But we can't talk about that because, you know, that's irrelevant.
No, it's not irrelevant. You look at the hardline conservative Christians and they're repressed, you know.
Hopelessly.
Wrong. Nothing's right.
Well, Kevin, it's been a magnificent conversation, but I just realized I got to get out of here.
Yes, sir. Well, I thank you, and you have a good weekend off.
All right. You take care, Kevin.
Okay.
Bye now.
Thanks for letting me vent.
Oh, you're more than welcome. Bye now.
Okay. Take care.
And I have happy news to report. Thank you, Jay and Barb. You put the finishing touches on the fundraising, and we can take a deep breath until Monday. When I'll catch you again, thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.